Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. It's just me in a big wide open echoey building. Maybe there's some spirits. I'm starting to suspect that there's some spirits. I've heard noises before with no rational explanation. So that's how I'm doing as 2020 proceeds. But it's not just me and a creepy ghost-filled building. We also have Ida Rodriguez. How's it going, Ida?
It's going well. You know, as doomed as I feel we all are at this moment, you always bring me joy.
Thank you. I try. Look, if I can bring you, funny Ida herself, joy, then that is something, because you've been bringing me joy for quite a while. Including last night, by the way, Ida was on our Get Out the Vote special. We were talking about what you need to know to register and all of that, tyt.com/vote. We talked about myths and misinformation about voting, voter suppression, your rights and all of that. And Ida, I was very glad to have you on that special.
Thank you. It was great. You did a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. I would say the producers did a great job and I did a great job of reading what they did. But anyway, some of that is probably clipped out and on the Young Turks channel if you want to see some of that. I can already see in the chat, people are going crazy because you're here. I don't think a lot of them saw the tweet. They thought that JR was here. JR has business he has to tend to today. And now everyone's like super excited for you to be here. And they should be. And for the more than 3,000 of you who are already here, please hit the like button, share the stream so that people know that the show's going on. And that more importantly, Ida's on it. Okay, that would be great. Thank you. And over the course of this hour, we're gonna be talking about a lot of stories, including the election, a little bit more on that. We've got Trump's white supremacy circus roadshow going on, attacking Ilhan Omar. Once again, we're gonna have her response. Fox still defending Kyle Rittenhouse. That's gonna be a lot of fun. But you know what's actually gonna be fun? Another ad by Midas Touch. They do good work. A progressive pack putting together hard hitting ads. We're gonna have one of those focused on Kayleigh McEnany a little bit later on. So hopefully that'll be a little bit of fun. And along the way, if you tweet us, send in comments on YouTube or Twitch, send in super chats, all of that, both Ida and myself will be responding to those. So should be a lot of fun. With that, Ida, you ready to go?
Let's go.
Okay, let's do this thing. we're gonna get through today and the rest of 2020 together. It has become increasingly clear that Donald Trump already knows how the election is going to play out. Not in terms of the votes necessarily, he's not worried about that, but he knows what his strategy is. And he's being very open about what he plans to do to make sure that he wins, regardless of what the people want. Take a look at this video.
Oh, I don't think so. We need 9 justices. You need that. With the unsolicited millions of ballots that they're sending, it's a scam, it's a hoax, everybody knows that. And the Democrats know it better than anybody else. So you're gonna need 9 justices up there. I think it's gonna be very important because what they're doing is a hoax with the ballots. They're sending out tens of millions of ballots, unsolicited, not where they're being asked, but unsolicited. And that's a hoax. And you're gonna need to have 9 justices. So doing it before the election would be a very good thing because you're gonna probably see it. Because what they're doing is trying to sow confusion and everything else.
So I don't think that that could be any clearer. He's asked a question. I understand it's really loud because for some reason these press conferences have to take place a foot and a half away from the rotors of a chopper. But anyway, he was asked about filling that seat and causing division and chaos and all of that, which obviously he doesn't worry about. That is the product that he sells. And said, no, you have to have 9 justices because we're gonna need them in the election. So Ida, it seems pretty clear that we can go about our whole voting thing, but his plan is to have the Supreme Court pull a 2000, pull a Florida, and just decide this thing for him.
Well, you know, I'm trying to work on my anger because it makes me really angry. And I don't know why. I saw, I watched the Social Dilemma and now I understand why I get so angry. But what I will say is this, you know, like I'm starting to understand why a lot of this stuff triggers me. This is what I will say is that people keep playing around. You know, he used the word hoax. You know, he has his trigger words that he continuously uses to stoke his base. When he says hoax, fake news, you know, there's always those words to to, you know, get the people going who don't have all of the information, the people who are not doing the reading, they don't do the research, they're not paying attention to what's happening behind the curtain. So that's how you do it. Now you're talking about, of course, the evangelical base who are constantly being emotionally motivated through issues of like abortion, capital punishment. Of course, he's going to push for the Supreme Court justice seat to be filled because he knows that he is feeding his base. And his base may not know what facts are, what laws are, what separation of church and state really means. They're just believing in the devil, and they're believing that they're coming for our morality. And that's all he's got right now, because he can't move intellectuals. He can't move people who really who have information, who are informed and well read and know what's going on. So all he's got is his last stand. But I'm just going to continue to urge people to understand that he's coming for our democracy. These are the talking points of people who are dictators. They attack the media, they attack the process, they attack the credibility of the system, and then they offer a better solution, which is them making all of the decisions. And those of us who were raised by people who come from places like that, like me, whose stepfather comes from Cuba, we have a sensitivity to this because we know the talking points because we've heard them our whole lives.
Yeah, this process is dark, it's horrifying, but it's not unique. It's not the first time a country has moved in this direction. And the only question is, do we want to be an inspirational tale of how a country regains their democracy and in fact, hopefully strengthens it beyond any state that it's ever been in from the very beginning, because it's been inherently flawed for literally centuries at this point? Or do we want to be another country that was once sort of democratic, sort of representative, and eventually just becomes some sort of a Christian white nationalist autocracy? Is that what we want? And like I said in the title of this video, he's just admitting it. He's saying they will decide. And we all know exactly how this process is gonna work. That's why, you know, I on the special, we were talking about the fact that people need to get ready for this not to be election day, but election week. It is going to take some time to count these votes if you want the votes to be counted. But if you don't, if you know that Republicans are gonna skew towards voting day of and Democrats are gonna skew towards voting by mail, that'll take a little bit more time to count, then what you wanna do is you wanna jump night of, say, I'm leading right now, everything else has been fraudulent. I mean, I've been telling you that for like 6 months now. Supreme Court needs to stop these votes from being counted. That's the plan. Everybody needs to be ready for it. You need to be talking to people about this possibility. You need to be tweeting at Anderson Cooper and Wolf Blitzer and Jake Tapper and all of that to not like call the election night of, or if Fox calls the election night of, which it probably will, not feeling like, oh, we gotta do what we did in 2000 and match them. No, we know exactly what's gonna happen. Nobody gets to be surprised when it happens. And as journalist Matt O'Brien said, the president is like a Bond villain who can't help but tell us about his plan to rig the election. Now the question is, are we gonna get out of their trap, or are we gonna get our bodies cut in half by laser? That's basically what we need to find out. This thing about the mail-in voting, it's not just rhetoric. As BuzzFeed reported last week, the president's reelection campaign and the National Republican Party are devoting millions of dollars to wage a state-by-state legal battle against mail-in voting during the coronavirus pandemic. Not only suing state officials, but also intervening in cases where they aren't a party to limit how Americans can vote from home. In just a minute, we're gonna have a great example of that. But this is really my fear. It's that we already know exactly what election day is gonna look like, but a lot of people, I think they're gonna feel pressure to just go along with it. Well, if Trump says, you know, we gotta stop the vote count, he is the president after all, that's my worry.
You know, the funny thing is that I don't like to feed some of the conspiracies. And you know what, I hate to use the word conspiracy theory because I know where it comes from. But then it makes you, like when you fall down these rabbit holes, because I do, because I like to read everything so that I can be informed about everything that's going on. Some of these people who believe that this virus was man-made to keep us at home so that they can take away our voting, it doesn't sound so crazy, right? Like I'm not promoting that, and I'm not saying that that's the fact. But then I understand why a lot of people who really are concerned, because they understand how long democracies last and historically what has happened with the democracies of the world and how our time technically would be up. So I get it. I think I understand why some people are up in arms But it does seem a little odd that during a pandemic that the administration would be so opportunistic to say, all right, voting from home is not, we're not gonna honor that. That makes people look at you with a side eye.
Exactly, and they've been saying that the Democratic governors and mayors are doing these lockdowns to benefit them somehow. Well, I'm already telling everyone exactly how election day is gonna go with the mail-in votes versus the day of votes. So if that's what we're worried about, then if we can just magically get rid of the lockdowns, that would make me a lot more comfortable in terms of day of vote. So like if you believe that crazy thing, then why would we maintain it when it's gonna make it a lot easier for Trump to try to put into effect his plan to steal the election? It doesn't make any sense, but these theories rarely do when you even scratch the surface. Yeah. But I do wanna give people an example of one bit of this. This legal campaign from the Trump administration has had an effect that might end up making tens of thousands of votes simply vanish. So let me give you an example of that. So a Pennsylvania election official said Monday this week that the state's recent ruling governing so-called naked ballots, mandating that any ballots that arrive without a proper envelope must be discounted, could cause more than 100,000 mail-in ballots to be rejected statewide and could swing the presidential election because of Pennsylvania's key role as a swing state. Okay, so what does this mean? What is a naked ballot? So in like two dozen states, you cannot simply put your paper ballot in an envelope, seal it and send it. It will be rejected. You have to put the ballot in a secrecy envelope and then the secrecy envelope in another envelope to make sure that it's harder for people to be able to look through the envelope and see your information. So that is an extra step ostensibly designed to increase secrecy, but it's also a failure state where people could be trying to vote, they could forget to do this because it's complicated and why would you have to do that? And then your vote actually doesn't get counted. And so you won't be surprised to find out that a court case was deciding whether those ballots should be nullified in Pennsylvania. And both the Trump administration and the National Republican Party got involved and pushed for them to be nullified and they got what they wanted. And so 100,000 votes overall, to give you an idea of how much it matters just in a very limited area, in a letter to state legislative leaders, Philadelphia elections chief Lisa Dealey calculated that the ruling would likely result in 30 to 40,000 ballots being rejected just in Philadelphia, based on a 2019 election in which 6.4% of ballots were returned without the envelope. So you're talking about just in one city, 30 to 40,000 Americans, if this continues, will have their votes vanish. 100,000 overall in an election where Democrats are more likely to vote by mail because Trump has scared his followers away from doing that. To put that in perspective, that 100,000 numbers, Trump won the state by 44,292 votes in 2016. So this is why they're doing that legal campaign, because hypothetically, if you run the numbers, it by itself could be enough to win him some of these states.
You know, I told you yesterday, I watched The Handmaid's Tale and it just reminds me so much. And even though, you know, art imitating life, I know some people say that I'm being ridiculous, but I can't stress to you enough how important it is to look at all of these intricacies, right? And it makes me wanna create like a task list to remind people to do this in Pennsylvania, like that we have to take the extra steps. Because at this point, I mean, I'm not crazy about Joe Biden. I've never been a Biden, you know, flunky. And that's what people are calling me, a sellout. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you don't understand that what's at stake. And if for my people, people of color, black people, Latinos, marginalized people, gay people, trans people, if you think it's bad now, imagine being and, you know, being ran by a dictator who is siding with people who think that what we are and who we are is bad and less than. You know, like it's like it is the lesser of two evils, but it's not denying one evil. But at this point, listen to the things. And I think the average person doesn't know this, John, like what you're saying right now, they don't. Because when Fox News is reporting, they don't report this to the people of the great state of Pennsylvania, because if they really were to uphold democracy and what the United States stands for, and they really wanted to give out the news, then they would give out all of the news so that their listeners and their viewers could get for informed decisions about voting. But they're not doing that because everybody is like rooting for a side. We've become the Red Sox and the Yankees. Yeah. And that's all the distraction. We're so distracted by all of this dumb stuff that they're really working behind the scenes to snatch it all away from us. And we just don't even pay attention. We're not paying attention.
Exactly. Exactly. There are already so many obstacles. There's so many ways that your vote is made less influential than it should be. So many things like this. And Trump and Republicans over the past few years have increased those. They will continue to do that. Anyway, that's one of the lessons that we try to get across to people. Anyway, if you're in Pennsylvania or in one of these other states that require secrecy envelopes, put this secrecy envelope on if you want your vote to count. And if you're in a state like Pennsylvania, you definitely want it to. Because as of right now, 538 projects that there's a 31% chance that Pennsylvania will be the state that is the tipping point for the election. That is not nothing. Okay, there's a very good chance that it might come down to Pennsylvania, which means we can't afford to lose a single vote. Some of these states were so close already. They're almost certainly going to be closer artificially because of actions like this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump held yet another massive rally to ensure that more of his followers get COVID and pass away from it. And one of the things that he now just does at every rally is just bring up either refugees or non-white elected representatives and have the crowd boo them. It's a fun sort of Orwellian thing that he does. Here he is spontaneously deciding to attack Ilhan Omar.
"We're going to win the state of Minnesota because of her, they say. He's telling us how to run our country. How did you do where you came from? How is your country doing? They're going to tell, she's going to tell us, she's telling us how to run our country."
Okay, so there's like 20 things that are absolutely awful there. But you got to love him telling her, like, why didn't she do a better job of running her home country back when she was a child before she came here as a refugee? And she's going to tell us how to run our country. Our is just such a weighty word in that sentence. I wonder what he means by our in that sentence, Ida.
You know, when he says our, you know what he's talking about. He's talking about the good old white people of America who are the descendants of the people who owned our people, the people who stole this country from the First Nations people and then made them second class citizens on their own land. You know, the people who scoff at immigrants for taking jobs that they wouldn't even think about doing. And as the pandemic has rolled on, we've seen evidence of that. We don't need to go back 10 years. We can just go back 3 months to, you know, the times of the farmers, the people who were farmers for Trump in California, who were banging for Trump really, really. And then when they deported the immigrants who were mining the crops, there were no white people showing up there to mine the crops to feed the people of the state of California. So when he says R, that's code. And he is constantly talking to his white supremacist base. And The funny thing is that he only needs them to do his work for them, because in addition to being a white supremacist, he's an elitist. So he would not even be associated with those people had they not served a purpose for him. So if you're walking around, stomping around in your KKK garbs, thinking that you and Donald Trump are cool, just know that he wouldn't spit on you if you were on fire, because in addition to not liking, I mean, he doesn't like 99% of the population, because he feels like they're all beneath them. And that includes you too, if you have to shop at a Pick and Save.
Exactly. And like, there couldn't be a stronger demonstration than the video we just showed you, packed with thousands of his followers, all jammed in together. The only ones wearing masks effectively are the ones mandated to wear them behind him on TV. And the rest have a very good chance of contracting a fatal illness. And he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He could even, like, it's one thing to have the rallies at all, you have to not care. But he could have the rallies and then tell everyone there, we handed you masks. I want you to put on masks. I want you to be responsible. I care about your life. Why don't you care about your life? Put on masks. And if you don't, then we're gonna shut this thing down, because you're my devoted fans and I care whether you live or die. But he would never ever say that, because he doesn't. He honestly doesn't. Now, on to Ilhan Omar. Like, it's just so sick that he just will shout in on like a 99% white crowd, how do you like your refugees? How do you like them? It's just, it's the most explicit racism. We're supposed to pretend that racism isn't a cornerstone of the Republican Party. Anyway, she's a US citizen. He seems to be forgetting that. A requirement for serving in Congress, and was naturalized after coming to the country as a child refugee from Somalia. She responded directly to him saying, firstly, this is my country and I am a member of the House that impeached you. Secondly, I fled civil war when I was 8. An 8-year-old doesn't run a country, even though you run our country like one, which is a great answer in a lot of different ways. She went on to send another tweet saying, these cult-like rallies leaving me wondering one thing, why are you so obsessed with me?
That's a great
which is very good too. The idea that she's responsible for the issues because she's a child. Okay, so our economy has fallen apart multiple times in the past few decades. Is that a random 8-year-old in Wisconsin's fault? Like, how did you actually have any consistency here? No, of course. It's just a racist attack against her. Think about it. The president of the United States holding an election rally, bringing up a first term congresswoman so that his white crowd can boo her. What amazing. It's just amazing. And it's been normalized. We just expect it at this point.
And then telling black people in America that those black immigrants coming here are also taking away from you to further divide us, because there's, you know, they're not just targeting the racists and the white supremacists, they're also targeting other people of color, because divide and conquer is real. So if you keep framing immigrants as being the enemy, and you know, even though we all know that if nobody knew who Ilhan was and she didn't speak and didn't tell you where she was from, she'd just be a black woman in America. And she would just be able to enjoy the basic 101 racism that is employed against black women in America. But then you want to add, you know, you can add the components, the additionals of being an immigrant and a refugee, which America has done a really good job as giving really bad connotations to. So now we're dealing with the complexities of the division, even within the communities of color, black people, and you know, you get it with the Haitians, you get it with the people that come here from Africa, you know, the talking points from white supremacy telling us that, you know, they sold themselves into slavery. So all of that is, I know I feel like it sounds like I'm off topic, but it's all connected, because when you frame her as being an immigrant, you don't just have white people who are racist hating her, you have black Americans who are hating her. And so you're feeding all of the hate from all over the place, because he has to cover his bases.
Yeah, and let's by the way mention that obviously, you know, she's not white, so they're gonna despise her. That's just a standard, you expect it. She's also one of the first two Muslim women to serve in Congress and the first to wear the hijab. She's been the subject of relentless Islamophobic attacks since running for office in 2018. Again, she's first term. But Fox News cannot stop talking about her. Trump can't stop bringing her up. His fans think about her for at least 7 to 9% of each one of their days. Like, they love to talk about us being triggered. Her mere existence dominates their thinking. They can't get past the fact that she was elected, because they think America is supposed to be a place where if you're Muslim, if you're black, if you wear the hijab, no, you shouldn't have a chance. There shouldn't be a chance of you getting elected. And as a reminder, last year, Trump called for Omar and some of our progressive peers in Congress, all of them non-white, by the way, to go back to the totally broken, crime-infested places from which they came. Trump supporters also chanted, "Send her back," during a rally last year. This is her country. She's a citizen of this country. She was actually elected. She won the popular vote in her district. I know that that's sort of a foreign concept to Donald Trump, but her constituents actually wanted her to be the person that got the office. Maybe that's part of why they can't stop demonizing her. And some of them, like Marjorie Greene, putting ads where she's holding an AR-15 in the faces of AOC and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar are posted there. If the day comes that one of his insane followers actually commits an act of violence against Ilhan Omar, Fox News is going to be delighted. His fans are going to be delighted. That's what this has been building towards for just about 2 years now.
Yeah, but you know what? Let me just say here and let me say it right now. Those of us who are people of color, black people in this country, we're not gonna sit around and just, we are not sitting around anymore just letting people continuously threaten us with violence. That's been the American way for a long time. So all of this, you know, romanticizing of the violence against these women of color, which one of them, Puerto Rican, which is a territory of the United States, but honestly, we know it's really a colony of the United States, is, you know, this talk, you have these crazies, you have these ignorant people who are constantly speaking violence and you know, putting their guns in the air as if they're the only ones who have guns. America's getting tired of this, and this is something that's been going on for a very long time. We are not, you know, I forgot to even mention that Ilhan being Muslim is also a big issue with her.
Yeah.
Hate against her, which is really funny. But if you think about the good black people that they like, did you see Donald Trump employ any empathy for Herman Cain, who received COVID possibly at one of his rallies? They just tossed him into the tons of casualties and just moved on accordingly, and actually made a joke out of it, like using his account after he was dead to drive home these ridiculous points. So these people who think that Donald Trump is for the black people, as some people come to say, Ilhan is the black people. So it's so frustrating. it makes me so.
I mean, the fact that Herman Cain died didn't break through at all to them. That he we don't know for sure that he got at the rally, but there's a very good reason to believe that he got it at the rally. I mean, he must have interacted with more unmasked people there than he had personally from the beginning of the pandemic to that point in 1 hour, basically. And they didn't care. Like, he was a former candidate for the Republican nomination for presidency, and he died at a Trump rally. And as a response to that, Trump stopped having rallies for like 2 months, and now he has them every day, basically.
But he's dead though, he's dead. That's the point, is that he is dead and it's like nothing happened. Like nothing happened. And it's you know, I don't understand what it takes. I don't think Joe Biden has been the best for black people either, nor Kamala Harris, but I just think that Donald Trump is an outright white supremacist. You know, you can be a bigot all you want in your own home. But when you are participating in the laws and the rules of the country that affect black people and people of color, now we really got a problem.
Yeah, 100%. We have a little bit of breaking news. A grand jury has apparently indicted former Louisville cop Brant Hankinson in death of Breonna Taylor. I cannot say that I was expecting this. I don't know how many people were expecting that. And by the way, that is not the end. That is not in any way the end. But it's something, I suppose. I don't know, Ida, what do you think? Are you surprised by this?
I don't know if I'm surprised. I feel a little indifferent about it, because I will tell you, I know we went from people not getting indicted or they just losing their job. First of all, they wouldn't get in trouble because it was legal for them to do it. Then it became something where they'd be on desk duty for a while and we would never get an indictment. So now we're at the indictment phase, and I believe in the Laquan McDonald case there was a conviction. So that is what we look forward to, is a conviction, because you know, there is no money that is going to make up for that life. You know, I know they, my friend is the attorney, my mentor is the attorney in Brianna's case, and I know that they did get the
12. Really?
Yeah, Benjamin Crump. You know, I just think it took so long. I mean, it took basketball, Hollywood, you know, the everyone on the ground that is not part of, you know, celebrity America to say her name for this to be something that could happen. And there are so many Breonna Taylors that we whose names we don't know and have had to go on with their life without a, an indictment or $12 million. And it just, it's just so, yeah. I just look forward to the police, the law enforcement being reformed in this country, because I think that we gotta get to the root of the problem. But I hope there's a conviction.
Yeah, and that's, I hope so, although the, you know, the record, the record does not imply that it's a guarantee. This one officer was charged with 3 counts of first degree wanton endangerment. And there were 3 cops. Only 2 of them were charged. Like, they fired as many shots as they could in the house. I don't even understand how you explain that this one cop out of the 3. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an expert on this. I guess somewhat surprised, but yeah, not. This isn't strong. This isn't like, oh, justice has been served. It's definitely not that. But, you know, maybe we'll get more details as time goes on. I don't know.
The fall guy. Okay.
Maybe.
You know, and the thing is that it wasn't just the cops, right? There was an administrative fail that caused this to happen. Like, it's a whole, you know, it feels like an episode or a couple of episodes of The Wire. It's not just these cops that went in there. It's a whole operation that needs to be held accountable for the loss of this life. If you know, all lives matter, where y'all at? Where are the All Lives Matter people right now?
Yeah. All lives matter, pro-life, all these things, respect for the First Amendment. They're great slogans, harder to live by, apparently, for a lot of these right-wingers. Anyway, that's the breaking news. I'm sure more of information will be available, but that's what we can respond to live while we're doing the show. And thank you to the producers for making me aware of that in the document. With that, why don't we move on to our next story? Jeez, this is something. So last month, Kyle Rittenhouse, during the Kenosha protests, went to those protests and ended up murdering several protesters. He was one of many militia members that flooded into this and other protests, saying that they need to defend other people's property. And they brought assault rifles to do it. And what do you know, Kyle Rittenhouse ended up using that assault rifle. But the fact that all of it's on video and you can clearly see him murdering people, that is not enough by itself to get Fox to not defend him. And they're doing that. But the terminology that they're using to defend him is utterly abhorrent. Take a look at this. They've got Pam Bondi on to talk about the case.
And people have to understand out there, that was a war zone. You've got a 17-year-old out there trying to protect his state. He's helping people who had been injured. He had paramedic training from being a lifeguard. He's taking graffiti off walls. He's trying to mitigate the chaos out there. And they rushed to judgment. I mean, we don't know everything yet. That video speaks volumes. You know, one's a prior sex offender. One had other charges. And they're chasing him down. Now, whether or not he should be charged with any of it, I think it was too soon to charge him. We don't even know the ballistics yet, because they charged him 2 days later, Sean. And there were bullets flying everywhere. Other people were firing. This kid was out there trying to help people. Were people killed? Absolutely. But again, we don't know yet. You've got a little boy out there trying to protect his community. Should he have been out there with a gun? No. But should he have been charged with murder? We just don't know yet. And they charged him 2 days later. So, you know, it's a war zone out there. What's it coming to in these liberal cities when teenagers have to go out there to try to provide aid to other people who are getting injured by these rioters?
Okay, there's so much about that. It's not his state. She knows it's not his state. he took an assault rifle and drove across state lines, none of which he was supposed to do, and brought it there. If it was a war zone, it's a war zone because some right wingers decided to bring weapons of war to it. That's what makes it a war zone, weapons of war being there. He chose to do that. That's not helping people who've been injured. That's not, you know, I'm gonna take down the graffiti by shooting at the building. You bring that there so that you can use the gun. She wants to wait for the ballistics report. I got a spoiler alert for you. The bullet was in his gun, it came out of his gun and it went into people and those people died. It's all on video, you've all seen it. And they are still, after all of this time, saying that there were other people chasing him down. He'd already murdered someone. He murdered a person and then tried to run away to evade justice. So they did what we laud, the good guy trying to stop a murderer from escaping. So he murdered more people and then fled back across state lines. It took a couple of days for them to charge him because he fled the scene of his multiple murders. And Pam Bondi knows all of that already. She understands all of that. But the thing is, he's a white guy with a gun, so he can't do any wrong. Whatever he was doing, I'm sure it was for good reasons. He can try to evade justice, he can try to get away with murder. He's just a little boy who murdered some people, so why don't we have more empathy for him?
You know, I'm really tired of these white women who have so much empathy for this little boy. Where was this empathy with Trayvon Martin, who was a little boy? They were the same age, right? It's only because it is a reflection of what of you and what you look like and what you value in this world. You know, to bring up the fact that one of those people was a sex offender, the president of the United States is a sex offender. Would that justify him getting shot by somebody without going
apparently
to trial? I mean, to hear somebody say that, and to say that these people are defending our democracy, our laws in this country, is ridiculous. She is justifying vigilantism by an entitled white supremacist that went out there in response to people fighting because black people are being mistreated and disproportionately murdered in this country. And we have these vapid hosts on Fox that all look like they are all from the same, this cookie cutter reality that is Fox News, triggering people, millions of people who are not reading books and have no information. That's why I say nobody insults their base more than they do. They do. That administration, that news, cable news network, Lord knows they are all bad, but that one right there takes the cake. Let me tell you something, had that been a black young man who did the same exact thing, and that the white person that got killed would have been a sex offender, they would have been appalled if you brought that up. He was a victim. You're not a judge, jury, and executioner. Yeah. I'm so tired of these people. That's why I don't want to have conversations with them. I don't want to sit on panels with them, because they are getting rich off of poor, dumb, racist white people. That's what they're doing. They're preying on poor, racist white people who feel like they're poor and that they are lacking because of people that look like me and people who are darker than me. When in reality, they're the ones who are responsible for keeping these people down. I don't want to hear nothing else about this, Kyle. If you don't have empathy for Trayvon Martin and Tamir Rice, who was 12 years old, a baby, and you can sit here and talk about he took some graffiti off the walls. And listen, they always talking about being afraid when they see black people and black men. All of us are scared when we see white boys with guns because they are the ones who are killing people in numbers. So when we sit here and watch this woman justify this foolishness, it is just, it's gotten to the point where Americans are consuming their news the way they consume McDonald's. And then it needs to stop. Put down the phone, put down the computer, and go read, because these people are misinforming you and they are poisoning your well.
Exactly.
Man.
Yeah. Well, sorry. So, okay. So he's just a little boy. He's just a teenager, because again, he's white. If you're white, you're like 10 years younger than you are. If you're a black 12-year-old, you're a super soldier. You got to be put down, obviously. So if Trayvon Martin had just had an assault rifle when he was being followed, stalked through his neighborhood by Zimmerman, he should have just turned around and gunned him down, because he's being chased. You know, Zimmerman, let's check his record. Did he deserve to die in this hypothetical? Of course, the difference is it's not exactly the same thing, since in this example, Trayvon Martin wasn't fleeing a murder he had just committed. They are literally defending a person murdering someone and then murdering the people who intervened to stop the murderer. That's what they're doing. Now, really fast, it would be one thing if Pam Bondi was brought onto Fox and she decides to defend a terrorist murder. That would be one thing. But it wasn't just Pam Bondi and it wasn't just a comment. Fox put production time into defending an act of domestic terrorism. Take a look at this video.
Rittenhouse fires a single shot, striking the man in the chest. A third protester fakes as if he's surrendering, then suddenly advances with a handgun aimed at Rittenhouse. A single shot strikes the man's right bicep.
So they put together a video saying, if after the fact the people that you murdered had any kind of record, you're now justified in murdering them. So what would Kyle Rittenhouse have a little database in his pocket that he was checking before he fired his assault rifle? He's checking, oh, this person ever been wanted for anything? Well, then that justifies murder. Again, this is the Christian network that's justifying murder. And again, they faked as if they were surrendering and then he pointed a gun at him. Kyle had already murdered someone. We have always agreed as a country that if someone is on a murder spree, it would be ideal if someone could stop them. That's what we say. Trump even said that he would have ran without a gun into Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School to stop the gunman. Well, apparently, if Trump had done that, the gunman would have been justified in murdering Donald Trump, because he was, after all, trying to stop him, and Trump has a record. He's been sued any number of different times. This is lit. They put that together as a network justifying continued murder. Not the first murder, but the continuation of a spree of murders that Kyle Rittenhouse had been engaged in. And obviously encouraging more people to do it. Those bodies are already in the ground. They already got what they wanted. They killed some protesters. I'm worried now about more Kyle Rittenhouses who are watching Fox News and being told every day, look how justified you are in grabbing a gun and going to a protest so that you can go murder some people. That's what they did. Fox News, maybe they're protected in some kind of way, but that is literally justifying murder. That is inciting more violence. I don't know how they get away with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And those guys are heroes. The people who died in combat to take down a murderer, a man who was out there killing people and assaulting people's right to protest in a country where they have tried to normalize the murdering of black and brown bodies, which it's been justified forever. Those are heroes, right? Those people who tried to stop him should be considered heroes. And listen, it's gonna get worse. It's gonna continue because look how we've devolved. Look at all of the stuff that has happened. They're trying to normalize violence and they do. They normalize the violence all the time. They commend it. To do a video and to put the victims on trial is what they are constantly arguing against every single time that one of Donald Trump's cohorts and sycophants get accused of a crime. You cannot convict somebody without a trial. We are innocent until proven guilty, unless you are running up against a white boy who's decided to kill people out of protesters that are fighting for the right for black lives to matter.
100%. There is nothing that could be done that they wouldn't defend. I mean, when Cesar Sayoc was sending pipe bombs to Democrats, remember that? We've all forgotten that, like, a super fan of Trump sent pipe bombs to all of the people that Trump would regularly rail against. They defended it. No, I mean, he wasn't really trying to do it. It was serious. I mean, the bombs didn't go off. So, like, it doesn't matter that a guy tried to assassinate a bunch of politicians and kill members of the media. And Trump to this day still demonizes the media. Now, one of his regular things at his rally is to mock Ali Velshi for being injured by the cops and just talk about the cops beating people down and how great that is. Isn't it great? Isn't it a beautiful sight to see them assaulting journalists? God, there are still so many people in this country that are asleep, that don't understand what we're going against, that have crafted this world that I guess is very warm and comfortable and cozy for them, where this isn't an actual dark, horrific place that we've gotten to. It's all the same thing. I can get whatever I want, whatever my political strategy is. That's probably good. It's not a problem that we have a president who is trying to weaponize white supremacy to hunt down and murder peaceful protesters and possibly his political opponents. That's not a bad thing. More and more White House officials, both current and former, are revealing what Donald Trump actually is. Lots of them are doing it anonymously, very brave, but at least we're getting the information. So take a look at what Trump has said about different groups of Americans behind closed doors. After phone calls with Jewish lawmakers, Trump has muttered that Jews, quote, are only in it for themselves and, quote, stick together in an ethnic allegiance that exceeds other loyalties, officials said. I mean, can you imagine if a Democrat, if there were on the record sources to the Washington Post saying that Biden had said that? Every head for Trump? No, it's fine. No, couldn't possibly be anti-Semitic. This, you know, sort of vaguely neo-Nazi movement couldn't possibly also be anti-Semitic. Couldn't possibly. And so this news, we're saying it, and then it'll be gone in a day, and no one will care.
You know, the other thing is that people. And I know that I'm probably going to get it for this, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's always this attack on Jewish people for sticking together after they had to survive and endure a Holocaust, right? I wish Black people had that in America, had an allegiance to each other. The divide and conquer that has been sprinkled upon us from white supremacy has disabled us from having a sense of unity, Latinos, Latinx as well, indigenous people. So and not to say that what he's saying is correct and okay, but to demonize a group of people who have been, whose children and people and grandparents have been put into ovens and murdered, and saying now we're gonna have each other's back because history shows us that when we trusted others, this is what they did to us. And to say that as if it's a bad thing, I think is anti-Semitic, because they are sticking together because they have to. They have trauma bonded.
Exactly.
It's so funny to me to hear people say, you hear about the Jews, they sticking together. Like, I wish we had that. I wish to God, the universe, or whatever you believe in, the trees, that people of color, Black people, had that sense of unity, because we wouldn't be under America's foot for so long.
100%. 100%. Yeah, and again, oh, Barry Weiss is gonna write such an op-ed about this. But no, and she could interview them. She could track down those sources and talk to them about it. Is she gonna? No, of course not, because anti-Semitism is only a thing if you can twist an Ilhan Omar tweet into something. That's it. If Trump is like openly talking about this, that's nothing. Anyway, it wasn't just the Jewish Americans though. In unguarded moments with senior aides, again, senior aides, President Trump has maintained that Black Americans have mainly themselves to blame in their struggle for equality, hindered more by lack of initiative than societal impediments, according to current and former US officials. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of got a point. They really should have more initiative. Why didn't they get hundreds of millions of dollars given to them by Papa? Why didn't they do that? That's what initiative is about. Have a business and a fortune given to you and squander it for literally decades, doing no better than you would have done if you just put it in a savings account over that time. Why don't they have that kind of initiative? And again, him saying these sorts of things, like, first of all, go on the record. But anyway, it's just gonna be ignored. What's the difference? What's the difference?
Yeah. Well, you know what? And I will say this, because even not just Donald Trump says this, but a lot of people who are in positions of privilege and power dare to say that to people of color, Black people. And I will go on record to say that I'm not qualified to speak on behalf of any all people, Black and people of color alike. But I will say that a lot of these mother crackers that have all this money and have all this wealth have built it on the backs of our ancestors. And now they taunt us and they flaunt it in our faces. Run Black people in America back their reparations. Run all of the descendants of the slaves back their reparations from France to the Dutch. And then we'll see who's wealthy in this country, built on actual work. We because there's wealth so much in this country, but we don't ever go back and follow the money and follow the work and see where it came from. It's very easy for somebody like Donald Trump, who is mediocre at best, right? Yeah. Mediocre is being kind, has failed at almost everything that he's done except being rich, white, and wealthy in this country. That's the only thing that he's done well, because everything that he touches is trash, including America.
100%. I wish that was it though. There's more from this Washington Post report. Trump's private musings. I love to call his decayed brain racist rants musings. Anyway, Trump's private musings about Hispanics match the vitriol he has displayed in public. And his antipathy to Africa is so ingrained that when First Lady Melania Trump planned a 2018 trip to that continent, he railed that he, quote, could never understand why she would want to go there. To an entire continent of countless different societies and civilizations, ways of life, language groups, culinary histories, all of that, all of it. A big X. It's like from Always Sunny in Philadelphia when Mac was planning a trip around the world and he just started Xing off continents because of racial groups there. That's what he actually thought. Melania apparently was interested in going there and having her little weird safari. She literally dressed as if she was going on a safari. It was very bizarre. And this is what he says about it. But when challenged on these views by subordinates, and I'm sure they're challenging very hard, Trump has invariably responded with indignation. Quote, he would say, no one loves black people more than me. And the 2020 version of that is, no one has done more for black America than me. Well, maybe Lincoln, but probably me. That's his response to literally everything. He can say whatever racist thing he wants. He just says that he loves them anyway. I'm appeased. I don't know about you.
Yeah. You know, I'm so tired of hearing all of these politicians saying all of the things that they've done for black people, people of color in this country. They've just been tokenizing us in every aspect of this game. And you know, to hear him, someone is arguing with me right now on social media about this. He is, when they talk about black people as if they can speak on behalf of all black people, right? All of them, every single one of them, right? You know, no one's done more for all black people. But then you look at what's going on in the country with the people dying from COVID, the loss of jobs. When he was signaling to white people in the suburbs that he was going to dismantle those initiatives that would allow poor people to move into their neighborhoods. Like, what exactly, when all of these people who keep arguing with me about, oh, you're writing for Biden, which I think hasn't been good for black people either. So, which administration has improved the conditions of any of the people who are marginalized in this country? We can't point to one, right? But what I'm saying is, when you say, tell me how in the last 4 years, it really has gotten better for the people in my community of Liberty City in Miami that is predominantly black, that my mother lives in. Please show me, send me, tweet me, DM me on Instagram. I will read them all out loud. Show me how it has gotten better when we watch George Floyd. This is trash, man. Like, really, are we having this conversation? They are all garbage. They've all been horrible to us.
You're 100% right. I'm gonna have a demonstration right now of some of the garbage, and this is where it gets, I mean, it's horrible, but darkly funny, I guess. So Trump has got this profile in the Washington Post about all the racist things that he constantly says. And there's also a defense of him, by the way, from some of these officials saying, yeah, sure, he said these things, but I wanna defend him. I'm gonna give you three different defenses that were provided in this article, each sadder and more pathetic than the last. So the first is, one former official said, Woodrow Wilson was outwardly a white supremacist. I don't think Trump is as bad as Wilson, but he might be. So that's the first. He's not as explicitly racist as Woodrow Wilson, or maybe Jackson or something like that. But maybe he is. Maybe he is. These are people working for him in the White House saying he might be that bad. That's the first level, Ida, is maybe he's as bad as any racist president we've ever had in our history.
You know, I think that sitting down, breaking down, and playing the who's the least racist game has been, it's so toxic and dangerous for people of color, because we don't need, what we need is actual reform and change. We don't need these white people to like us. We need them to get out of our way so that we can have life that has quality. And I think that that's where the, there is, because there are a lot of white people that are mad who hate us and don't want to be forced to like us. And what we keep saying is, we don't need you to like us. We need you to get out of our way, because we have skin in the game. We've come from people who have worked to build this economy, and we would just like to have our lives. And if you don't want to live in a neighborhood with us, then don't gentrify our neighborhoods. Go live somewhere else. Yeah. You know what I mean? Stay out of our way is what we're asking, because apparently your presence in our lives are dangerous for us. And we have to think about reframing. It's not the other way around when black people come around. No, when you think about Parkland, when you think about Connecticut, when you think about the Aurora, who are the assaulters going in there murdering people in numbers? Just get out of the way. Get out of the way. Donald Trump is a racist. He's not good. He's an elitist. He's a sexist. He is not for anybody who has ever been marginalized in this country, including poor white people, whether they want to admit it or not. And all of these flunkies are following suit, because to them, power is more important than humanity. So when we have these conversations, you can miss me with all of that. Donald Trump has not improved the conditions for any black people in this country unless they're in the top 1%.
Yeah, 100%. And in terms of the excuse making, this is where we turn to our second defense of Donald Trump in this profile. So this is a third former senior administration official says, I don't think Donald Trump is in any way a white supremacist, a neo-Nazi, or anything of the sort. But I think he has a general awareness that one component of his base includes factions that trend in that direction. So I got news for you. If you're not a neo-Nazi, a white supremacist, or whatever, but you will play to that part of your base, I got news for you. You're a white supremacist. That's what that is. If you're trying to stay in political power by appealing to white supremacists, you're a white supremacist. You don't get to be like, no, I have no negative thoughts when it comes to race, but I'm gonna milk everyone who does. That's not how that works. It certainly shouldn't be how it works. Okay, you want the third? The third defense? We don't have a graphic for this, but I just thought it was amazing, because this is such an own of Donald Trump in multiple ways by people doing their best to defend him. So after all of those things that we just told you that he's said, several officials said that Trump is not a disciplined enough thinker to grasp the full dimensions of the white nationalist agenda, let alone embrace it. Others pointed out that they've observed him making far more offensive comments about women, insisting that his scorn is all-encompassing and therefore shouldn't be construed as racist. This is a quote I'm gonna give you from a former White House, a senior White House official saying, this is a guy who abuses people in his cabinet, abuses four-star generals, abuses people who gave their life for this country, abuses civil servants. It's not like he doesn't abuse people that are white as well. How could he be racist? He hates women, doesn't he? How could he be racist? He was mean to Jeb Bush. This is the defense of a senior White House official who worked with him possibly for years. The best they can say is, well, he's no more racist than he is horrible in literally every other way.
And that he's not a disciplined thinker to grasp the complexities. The comedy writes itself. Like, he's too dumb to be a white supremacist, guys. Like, he's not that smart. He doesn't know what the tenets are of being a supremacist. How dare you call him that? That's just, I don't, we've devolved, like, I know now why I get messages from people, my friends that live in other parts of the world, and we're the laughing stock of the world. And it happens because we've been so smug and snarky towards everybody else. But it's just, that's embarrassing for you know, somebody who knows you closer to your vest than most of us to say he's not a disciplined enough thinker. I mean, I never heard code for dumb. Like, oh my God. I mean, I think I'm going to start using that. Because the dumb people don't know that he's calling their president dumb, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's very carefully targeted there. Man, who needs enemies when you have defenders like this? I can't believe that I skipped over that. I'm so glad that you mentioned it. He's too stupid to be a Nazi. Yeah, put that on his gravestone someday. Unfortunately, I got news for you. There were smart Nazis and there were dumb Nazis. You can be as stupid as you want and also be racist as hell. So it's not a good defense anyway. But it is awesome that it basically owns Trump beyond what I can usually accomplish. Yeah. Anyway, okay. With that, we're a bit over. We're gonna do this last story really fast because it is pretty quick, and maybe will make us feel a little bit better. We'll see. So we're gonna transition immediately into this. Progressive PAC Midas Touch is back with another hard-hitting ad. This time, hitting Kayleigh McEnany, the press secretary, for her unthinking, uncritical defense of Donald Trump every step of the way during this pandemic.
This president will always put America first. He will always protect American citizens. We will not see diseases like the coronavirus come here.
The 15 within a couple of days is going to be down to close to zero.
This president has this under control. Right now, we're proceeding as normal. Joe Biden's looking for an excuse to get off the campaign trail.
50 or 60,000 people.
65,000 people.
75, 80, 80 or 90,000 people.
They had minimum numbers of 100,000. And I think we're going to beat that.
We have between 100 and 200,000. We all together have done a very good job.
The United States has now registered 200,000 coronavirus deaths.
The death toll will surpass 410,000 by January.
Why haven't you said anything about the U.S. hitting 200,000 deaths?
Go ahead. Anybody else?
The president has always been clear-eyed with the American people. He was always clear-eyed about the lives we could lose.
I will never lie to you. You have my word on that.
I'll let you go first. That was pretty rough, man. Going back to the very beginning.
Anytime somebody occupies that podium in that particular position, I prepare myself for a plethora of lies. You know, I'm using words that Donald Trump doesn't know. I'm telling you that she, you know, I saw Sarah Huckabee Sanders on The View not too long ago. Sean Spicer, like, just think about. Since Donald Trump has been in office, all the lies that have been told to the American people from that podium that have been continuously justified until the person expires and cannot tell the lie anymore. I'm just waiting on Kayleigh's expiration because her nose's shape is changing since she's been in that position, and it is continuously. If you look at her from the beginning, she looked fresh, she looked crisp, she looked like ready to take on the world. And as the lies have continued, she just looks. You can see the age on her face, you can see the stress on her face. I'm not shaming her. I'm just saying once you are in a position where you are continuously being stressed. We saw Obama's hair color change. You see the aging on Bill Clinton.
Totally.
You can't just continue to just go around. It one thing is point of view versus fact, right? People have different points of views. You can, Sean Hannity can say whatever he wants from the place of his opinion. But when these people are lying and telling you things and disguising them as fact, when people are out here dying, struggling financially, losing their businesses, losing their jobs, they don't have proper health care, it is a criminal act. And I just think they should be held accountable. There should be a law that you should not be allowed, if you are in any position of power or office, to lie to the American people. They should have a panel of fact checkers that are constantly nonpartisan. They're available to the people of America to say these people are lying to us. Because when we pay our taxes, which we go to jail if we don't, to provide them with the best lives that they're having while we are suffering during this pandemic, it is a gross misuse of power.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, to see it all summarized, I remembered some of those, but she said it wouldn't come here.
I heard her.
How is she not being asked about that literally every day? It was already here then. Maybe we didn't know it, I guess, although they probably did. But the idea that it would never come, and then every step along the way, it's gonna be fine, it's gonna be fine, it's gonna be fine. 200,000, big win. We're the big winners with our 200,000 deaths and counting. By the way, in yesterday's reporting, 821 more COVID deaths were reported, which I guess is an improvement. It's less than 1,000 It's still 821 families that have been destroyed now by this in a one-day period. So that's wonderful. But how do you live with yourself? Like, honestly, I know everybody in politics lies, and every press secretary is chosen based on their ability to lie. But she knows what she's said. She knows how it changes every day. We know over the weekend when Trump did his little rally, and he said it affects virtually nobody. So the next day at the press conference, she was able to flip to her little binder for her prepared statement about that, which means she watches all of these Trump rallies thinking, oh my God, what horrible, horrendous, cruel statement am I gonna have to come up with a defense for, because I'm definitely gonna be asked about it. She didn't randomly prepare for that thing. So she's watching and hearing the guy she serves say it affects nobody when she knows it's killed 200,000 people, let alone how many hundreds of thousands of families have had to deal with extended hospital stays, medical bankruptcy, lingering organ damage, all of that. There can't be anything left inside of you. How horrible of a person you are. What could you possibly do to shield yourself from acknowledging that? How big of a liar you are, and what function your lies serve in US government, what policies they help to continue. Yeah, I don't think I disagree with the ad at the end that she's necessarily leaving anytime soon, but she definitely should. She definitely should.
I just wonder, like, what would it would take? Like, should we highlight the number of white people who've died from coronavirus and specify this many white people have died from coronavirus? This is really bad. Like, I don't understand what it will take, because the problem with this country is this celebrity worship, John. These people do not look at these politicians and public officials as what they are. They idolize them. They're not constituents. They're part of this cult where they think these people are like Cardi B and Kim Kardashian. And you cannot possibly really respect or love a politician if you cannot hold them accountable and at times disagree with them and call out the BS. So how is it that you truly love Donald Trump if you can sit there and watch him lie, you can watch Kaylee lie, you can watch all of Ted Cruz lie and not say, hey guys, this is not okay. That's not a real constituent. So at this point, Kaylee has a fan base. Her followers went up. She's changing her hair color, her lipstick. And you know what? People are dying, and white people are dying too. It's not just a black and brown virus. And COVID-19 is called COVID-19 because they knew about it in 2019. So stop talking about this like it just popped up in 2020. The reason they called it COVID-19 is because they discovered it in COVID-19. So stop already. We heard horrible things about the Chinese. Remember, Donald Trump was on China. Then the coronavirus comes, and now he gets a chance to call it the China virus. It's like, man, I feel like we're in a bad movie. We're in a really bad movie.
Well, you know, every movie has to end sometime, right? Maybe it's coming. Maybe we're in the final act. I don't know. We'll see. But everything gets a sequel these days. So we do have to watch out for that too. This extended pandemic, the lockdowns, the uncertainty about when things will go back to normal, especially in the areas of, for instance, schooling, has produced all sorts of pressures on parents and on families, some more than others. And joining us now to talk about one attempt to allay some of these added pressures, we have the CEO of Floreo, Vijay Ravindran. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So tell me about Floreo and how it's going to help to deal with some of the added times and pressures and being stuck at home for some of these families.
Yeah, so Floreo focuses on helping special needs families, especially kids with autism. What we do is we use virtual reality to create scenes that are clinically designed to help kids with developing social and behavioral skills. These are some of the very skills that they might be working on if we didn't have a pandemic and we were having special education classrooms and at-school specialists working on different types of social and behavioral skills for development. And so what Floreo does is we use virtual reality to allow the child to experience these scenes and develop these skills. And in you know, when the pandemic hit, we rushed a capability that is now being used actively by some schools and therapy clinics, where we enable distance learning based delivery of that virtual reality. So you can have a virtual reality headset in the home of the family, and either having a parent working with them in person, which is of course great if you can have that happen. But in other cases, to have specialists from the school system or a therapy clinic be able to over the internet in a telehealth or distance learning style work with the child on delivering social skills.
Well, yeah, I can certainly imagine how that would help. So in terms of the focus on virtual reality, why is that the direction that you went with? Is there a particular reason that that's helpful for children with these particular needs?
Yeah, I mean, virtual reality is a powerful medium when you're trying to teach whole body skills, skills that require focus, so that require simulating how the real world works. So to give you a simple example, I can talk you through how to cross a street, or we could practice in the real world where the cost of making a mistake could be quite severe, or you can practice in virtual reality where you can see moving car traffic, you can learn the basics of looking both ways, you can understand the difference between stop signs and street lights and pedestrian walk signs. And so virtual reality can be an immersive medium where you can teach these skills, you can practice, and you can visualize them and work through the types of sequencing that might be sometimes difficult for kids with these challenges.
So you mentioned one example there of learning to cross the street. What are some of the other areas of learning that this service provides?
Yeah, so we have quite a wide selection today, over 175 lessons and growing. These span basic skills like eye contact and the ability to imitate other kids. So these are kind of core building block skills that are delayed for children with disorders like autism. Additionally, we have different types of stimulation, so how to talk to peers, how to help make friends, how to detect bullying and potentially get help in the right manner. And probably most notably for this moment, some of our main research has been on a set of lessons on how to interact with law enforcement safely. So we've been working on teaching kids if they're on the street and having limited independence and they have an encounter with law enforcement, how to broach the types of conversations that the police might have.
Yeah, that's really interesting and certainly timely. Was this curriculum regarding law enforcement, was that made in conjunction with law enforcement? Was it a particular focus considering the conversation that's been going on nationally all year? Or is it just an important set of skills to have?
Well, as many folks know, these types of challenges have been going on for years now. And so the origins of building these lessons was a terrible incident in 2016 involved in outside of Miami, involving an adult with autism and their therapist and the police kind of shooting the therapist. And families have a large fear factor around you spend all this energy helping the child with special needs get to a point where they could be on the sidewalk, they could be in the park themselves or playing with friends. But then you don't have confidence that in the types of interactions that happen with law enforcement, that they're going to be able to understand what's going on, say the right things to de-escalate the situation. And so we started working with the Montgomery County Police Department outside of Washington, D.C. initially, and then later with the Philadelphia Police Department. And we were fortunate enough to be awarded a 3-year grant from NIH to build out a whole suite and then research it through Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And so we've been working closely with Children's and with Philadelphia Police Department to research these lessons and build those out. And we're actually now going to be ending those to also include empathy training for the police officers, as well as exploring other ways that we could be helpful in bridging the gap that exists.
So you mentioned how the number of lessons you have is rapidly growing. Like looking forward to the future, a year or two in the future, what's the goal for your service?
Yeah, there's a myriad of different life and transition goals that kids have as they grow up, and that for children with different types of challenges, they might have trouble learning those skills. We see a big opportunity to build an expansive catalog of social and behavioral learning and trainings. It starts with when kids are young and need help with things like eye contact. They grow up and interacting in the classroom, interacting with friends. playing. And then eventually it's with job interview trainings, living independently, you know, basically the types of goals every family has where they want their children to become independent, gainfully employed adults. And and when you're raising a child with special needs, there's a whole set of challenges that make it hard sometimes for you to envision getting to that goal.
And so I'm sure that, you know, during the research process and, you know, while the product's been live, you must be communicating with families. What's the reaction been like to the having access to this sort of product?
Yeah, family feedback has been tremendous. They see that we're building something that meets a need. You know, as I said, there's lots of challenges, and while there's therapy services available and school systems doing what they can, there are major gaps in filling the needs that families have, especially as children get older and start to reach that place where they're starting to have needs around transition and adulthood. And so our curriculum has been largely driven by customer feedback. So we built a few lessons, started working with Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, started showcasing what we had, and then the rest of what we've been able to build out since then has been driven by positive customer feedback and saying, I wish you did X. And so, you know, we're constantly driven by the moment. So our latest lessons are around why to wear a mask during COVID-19. You know, kids with autism.
A lot of Americans could use that lesson.
Yeah, at least 40%, right? So the issues around droplets and why we should be wearing masks to prevent prevention. Sometimes having extra levels of visualization and being able to literally understand how two people can be infecting each other in proximity can be helpful. And so the lessons we've built use virtual reality to show what it looks like for the droplets flying around, what would happen if you put a mask on, what happens when you yell and cough, and some of the other things that we now know potentially contribute to transmission rates.
Awesome. So if someone is watching this and they're interested, maybe they have a family member that they'd like to introduce to this, where can they find out more information about the service?
Yeah, we would love for you to go to our website, floreotech.com, FLOREOTECH, and you'll get information there both for yourself as a family if you're interested, but also if you want to introduce your school system or your clinic that you're going to for therapy services. You know, special needs families are suffering right now during COVID-19. Special education, just a lot of it doesn't work over video conferencing. And that meanwhile, it's, you know, potentially very challenging to go to a clinic right now. It's hard to maintain social distancing. A lot of children, especially if they have special needs, have difficulty adhering to the type of guidelines that are out there. And so, you know, I think we're trying to meet a need that families have during this very trying time.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a very positive thing. I think that we're all, for a variety of reasons, looking for alternatives to video conferencing 6 months into this thing. And so you're doing a very positive thing. So thank you both for that and also for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.